I'm Dan Nicasso with the Honolulu Advertiser, and we're at the Capitol Building with Vivian Iona, the moderator of the International Women's Leadership Conference. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan.
Mrs. Iona.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time.
No problem.
Can I ask you this?
Of course. I'm 48.
48?
I'll always be 3 years younger than my husband, so it doesn't matter.
And for our purposes, you are the wife of the Lieutenant Governor, Duke Iona.
Right.
But for our purpose of our interview, you are the moderator, the one and only, of the... It's the third...
Governor's Women's Conference, yes.
Right. And have you... International Women's Leadership Conference.
Right.
And have you been involved all 3 years?
Yes, I have. In fact, the first year, I moderated the entire conference.
You did?
Which was my first experience in that position. And I felt that they should have asked someone who had lots of experience in it. But they were quite confident and generous in having me moderate the last two. And it was, the first one was a little stressful. I had every speaker, every minute, every second on my notes, and I followed it to a T, and I was behind the stage, and it was quite exciting and somewhat on the edge of my experience and something like that. Maybe even intimidating, and yet everyone was fantastic. It was organized. It was professional. Speakers each year have been outstanding. And they were kind enough to ask me again last year. Mm-hmm. It was much more comfortable. I got into the rhythm of it. And this year they've pampered me somewhat. I'm not introducing every single speaker. I am starting off early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
I believe right after a video conference with Laura Bush.
Wow.
Not a video conference, I should say. Let me find out what we're calling it.
Sure.
Maybe a video message. I'll give you the right words. Videotape greeting.
I see.
By Laura Bush and also Oprah Winfrey.
Now, she is doing a videotape message as well? Oprah?
Yes, both of them.
Well, that's quite a coup.
Yeah, that's quite impressive.
While we're on it, while we're on the speakers, who else is scheduled to attend that you're excited about?
Fantastic lineup. You know, they've condensed it into one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of the women who would like to attend, who have considered in the past and have not yet, perhaps they feel they could take away one day of work.
Right.
And yet it's so fulfilling, you know. It's so gratifying. And when you walk away, you think, why didn't I come to the last 2 years? But again, they've condensed it into one day. Karen Hughes,
mm-hmm.
She's a former United States Undersecretary. Ambassador Hughes. She managed the White House, Office of Communications,
right, sure.
Media Affairs, Speechwriting, Press Secretary. Very outstanding career. I'm sure she has lots to share with us. Our luncheon speaker will be Rear Admiral Sally Bryce O'Hara, who's our new commander of the Coast Guard.
Right here.
Right here, uh-huh. In Hawaii. Traditionally, she may be the first female commander, you know. I'm sure she'll let us know that day, but I haven't heard her personal story, but I won't be surprised. Izumi Kobayashi, President Merrill Lynch, Japan.
Wow.
And I think we're all looking forward to hear this extraordinary woman from Iraq, Zainab al-Suwaj, and her experience and, you know, her role in this historic time in her part of the country. I'm sure we'll be at the edge of our seats. Also, two of the ladies from the Philippines, the governor met this on her, what do what we call it, centennial visit in January. I was also privileged to be there with her and met both of these ladies, Governor Grace Padaca, she's the governor of the province of Isabela, and Dr. Reyes, the president of the Philippine Women's University. And again, we're blessed to have Renee Amor, who really rocks and rolls the conference. With she's got a, you know, a huge personality. She's fantastic speaker, and we're all waiting for her return. She really lights up the place.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. And her work in social service is far-reaching. She's in so many different mentorships and social services. She's got quite a conglomerate of businesses and social issues she's involved with.
But she's a dynamo, huh?
She'll play, last year, let me just put it this way, she played Chaka Khan and came down the center aisle. And I was a little nervous because I was backstage looking for, I had introduced her and I couldn't see her.
That's great.
Yeah, she's great.
And then...
And Dr. Janetta Cole, again, a videotape message. The first African-American woman to serve as president of Spelman College. And the first woman ever to be elected to the board of Coca-Cola. Quite impressive.
Wow.
Our own Constance Lau.
That's right.
You know.
Who needs no introduction.
No. You know, we're so proud of her. And she can only inspire our local girls, our young ladies also attending.
And this is August 29th, which is a
Tuesday. August 29th. Registration will open from 7:30 in the morning. We should be starting right at 8:30. On to 4:30 and finish up with a nice reception.
At the Sheraton.
At the Sheraton, Waikiki.
Right. And how much does it cost?
The student price is $99 for full-time students. We have... I have it all marked down.
Okay, I'll get that from you later.
I'm sorry. You see those 22 questions I had? I think I literally put it on the side so I wouldn't, and I wrote down all the answers.
Okay, I'll grab
it. I believe it's
later.
$99.
For a full-time student.
For a full-time student. Gosh, $149. I told you I was going to have this short-term memory.
I'm sure the lunch will be great, too.
It's right on the website, all the prices.
Which is what? Do you remember the website?
Yeah, right on the bottom.
Right, maybe you can say it.
IWLCHI.org, International Women's Leadership Conference, HI for Hawaii.org, IWLCHI.org.
And can people register on the website?
Absolutely, online.
Okay. How many people are you expecting, or how many have you gotten previous years?
Previous years, we've had close to 300. This year's, as of a couple days ago, we were just over 400.
Wow.
Yes, and so we're hoping to, you know, hit 500, and if not, go over it.
Wow. Okay. We're going to go back to the conference in a little bit. I want to find out a little bit more about you.
Yes.
Where were you born?
Born and raised right here in Honolulu.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts, though?
Makiki. Lincoln Stevenson Roosevelt, 76. I just had my 30th reunion, thank you.
Roosevelt,
76. My father... was from Boston. He came with the Navy to Hawaii and met my mother here in Hawaii. My mother is born here, but her parents are born in the Philippines.
Oh, okay. And did you go to college?
Yes, I went to Honolulu Community College and I studied deaf interpretation.
Really?
Yes. Unfortunately, I didn't pursue it and didn't use it and went right to work at the airlines and worked there for 25 years.
Did you get an AA degree from
HCC? No.
You studied deaf interpretation?
Yes.
May I ask what the interest was?
What brought me to that place, very interesting, speaking of women in leadership. I grew up with a neighbor named Patty. Her mother was Georgia Morikawa, M-O-R-I, Morikawa. She was deaf, and she...
Patty was, or...
Her parents were deaf, and Georgia, her mother, was just an outstanding leader in the deaf community. She worked in an insurance company. She was instrumental in many areas concerning the deaf population here in Hawaii. And that was my first introduction at 6 years old. And it had such an impression on me. It seemed simple, you know, yet it was like a secret language. You know, it just intrigued me.
This is American Sign Language?
Yes, American Sign Language. So, maybe I should say, in my world, in my life growing up, I grew up with a mom who had mental illness, as long as I've known her. So, in our home, I believe my father felt that we should, as soon as we graduated from high school, we needed to get out and go to work. And that's what we all did. And that's how, you know, I was working full-time and going to school part-time. And, you know, tried to go through the whole deaf interpretation program. And right at the end, you know, just stuck with the airline job because I couldn't get... In that time, I had a conflicting schedules. And, you know, made a career of that 25 years at the airport. But the sign language, yes, had lasting impression. I still try to attend many of their functions. Anything that's going on with them, I'm very interested. I'm still friends with Patty. Yeah, we try to have lunch once a year.
What kind of career were you hoping to have for deaf interpretation?
Absolutely anything.
Teaching or
interpreting, like we have interpreters in courts. Wherever, the girl on the corner of the TV, you know, I was really open to do anything in the community. Absolutely anything. And
is it a skill you have to keep up with, like any other skill?
It probably, you know, I think if, I wish, you know, whenever Patty and I are together, you know, I always try to make her, you know, do sign language for me, but she's so fast.
So you ended up, are you able to say what airline?
Air Canada.
What did you do there?
I worked customer service for 25 years here at Honolulu International Airport. It was... You know, I worked full-time until we had our kids, and then it was just a nice part-time job. You know, fortunately, my husband, you know, he anchors, you know, the home with his career. And
remind us again, how many children?
We have four.
Four.
Right, and working part-time allowed me to be a mom and take them, you know, wherever they needed to go in sports. And
I
think every family out there understands, you know, the part. If you don't have grandma or grandpa or auntie, you know, to help out, it's the burdens on, you know, on the folks. And it really allowed us to raise the kids and still have someone present. And I worked night shift.
Oh, my goodness.
For half of those years. And even as difficult as it was... like I said, you know, if somebody was sick, had no school, was on vacation, what have you, one of us was there.
What was the hours of the night shift?
Various.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, it was. It was 10 to 2, 9 to 1, 7:30, 1:30, 9:30, 3:30. You know, it was a little sacrifice, and yet it just... removed a lot of pressure, and it allowed us to have a parent present.
Right.
You know, even if she was kind of sleepy and crouchy.
Good for you. The next question is a breakthrough job, and this could be really the people answer anything. It's often, you know, helping mom and dad at the store when they were kids, or mowing lawns, or a career. But it's something that you learned, an experience that taught you something about, it could be bad leadership, good leadership, motivation, how organizations don't work or should work or did work. That's kind of what we're looking for.
Okay, this might be ironic. I'd have to say retirement. Because...
Retirement from the airline?
Retirement from the airline.
What year was that?
2002. I had 25 years. And that was the year Actually, the story
That's
is quite...
the first time somebody said that.
Exactly. I'm sure it is. Actually, it is an interesting story. I don't
Please.
Know if I should... I don't want to... since I've already mentioned the airline's name, I actually asked for a leave of absence because once we had accepted the challenge to run for office, mm-hmm. we found quickly how demanding and how demanding it could be on our family. And
especially a statewide office.
Especially a statewide office, having never been in politics prior to this. I would go to work at the airlines at night, mm-hmm. and in the morning, you know, Duke would take the kids to school, and the bigger ones would, you know, drive each other. And then I'd get up and go work at the headquarters, our little humble headquarters at Macaulay Shopping Center.
And the election headquarters.
Right, 2002, headquarters.
Right,
primary and the
right.
general. And then I would do the afternoon, pick up the kids, get them to whatever sports, go home and do dinner and get them homework and all of that jazz, mm-hmm. and then go to work again. And we were doing this for a couple months. And we felt that last month would probably be very crazy. So I asked for a leave of absence for 30 days for the mm-hmm. month of October. Unpaid leave of absence.
Right.
And just being a quite qualified, capable,
sure.
great customer service agent, you know, for all those years. Unfortunately, they did not approve it. And having already passed 25 years,
right.
2 months prior, we felt that that was a door opening and closing, or I should say closing and opening.
25 years meaning you had full benefits, or what does that give you?
Well, I started so young uh-huh. that my benefits were quite humble. So I took a lump, a very small lump sum, and because I was only 44 at the time, my benefits were not very much. So it's really a step in faith, and
right.
just felt a different direction. And, you know,
so what did that teach you about?
Quite a humbling experience, and I was very disappointed because I felt I, for one thing, if my husband didn't get that job, I really would have liked to kept my job.
Right.
If he didn't have his, you know, the job, and not that I was concerned about him not having or
right.
finding something else, because at that point he was working on his own. He was mediating and arbitrating.
Right.
And,
But the point being that it would have been such a small sacrifice from the company's point of view in order to retain a 25-year employee who really wanted to work there.
Absolutely.
And continue working there.
Absolutely. I agree. So I
wasn't trying to put words in your
no,
mouth.
No, I was disappointed, but felt again that, you know, God was closing one door and opening another.
Mm-hmm.
And I typed up my resignation and started all the paperwork, and with all the vacation I had coming up still and blah, 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 I was gone probably in less than a week.
Wow.
And it was, of course, I have lifetime friendships, and I still am in contact with, you know, my very dear friends who I worked with for so long. And so this was a breakthrough. This was a turning point,
mm-hmm.
and it. What I tell people is, you know, it just... those 25 years of customer service surely provided me with what I needed for the years ahead, for the 4 years ahead, working with the public. And
Why was it a turning
yeah.
point?
Because I left probably the routine and the comfort and, you know, the dependency on that paycheck,
mm-hmm.
you know. Tuition and mortgage is, you know, is our motto.
Yeah, so, right.
And yet, you know, for everything that I've experienced in the last 4 years, you know, I could not have...
Sort of forced you to make the switch into the other life, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And made it quite possible. Because now I'm available to, you know, while my kids are at school, I'm happy to visit other children at school.
Mm-hmm.
I can attend various functions of various... nonprofits that I'm involved mm-hmm. with. It's completely opened my schedule And I have to say, as long as it's during the day when my kids are at school, I'm happy to attend. The evening events, and there are so many. My husband and his assistant, Viola, are really great about screening and deciding, which ones would be best that we both go to, or some one that's very, of great interest to us. Then I will, go out during the week. I try not to.
Right.
Because usually our weekends are quite busy.
Right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, a little known fact about you in this.
A little known
We're looking for
fact.
Something that's kind of fun that maybe even some of your friends don't. They'd be a little surprised.
I feel like I'm, quite honest and quite open. Everybody knows.
Well, I'll tell you the last one.
Okay.
We had, it was in Monday's paper. It's the Servco head honcho when he was in high school in Hilo. They were at a golf tournament and he hooked a koi from the koi pond from the 8th floor balcony and wheeled it up.
Oh, wait, this is more like a true confession. Okay, let me think.
He actually had a couple.
He said his mother's maiden name was Ching and his brother married a woman named Ching, and so he's
his sister-in-law is Ching Ching. little known
We
fact.
Can get back to that if you'd like. I'm looking for something kind of
quirky,
get to know
different.
You a little bit. Yeah.
Well, besides just my interests, I just love hot fudge sundaes.
Do you make them?
No. Somebody else to make it. It's you have to go to all the different places and try theirs. Big hula pie fan. Duke's Restaurant. Love the hula pie at Duke's Restaurant.
Where's Duke's Restaurant? Duke's.
I'm sorry, having nothing to do with my husband. At the Outrigger.
Oh, Duke's Canoe Club.
Yes, yes.
The hula pie.
The hula pie.
What is that? I've never had that.
Oh. It's not this big. And it's, the vanilla ice cream and the chocolate. It's kind of like your mud pie. But
you like chocolate, huh?
Bottom line.
What else kind of chocolate do you like?
Milk chocolate. Chocolate.
When the lieutenant governor is surprising you with chocolate, what does he do for you?
we use the cookie corner, oatmeal chocolate chip works great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So are you a well-known chocoholic, or is this a secret?
No, it's not a secret.
Okay.
It's, written all over my face.
Right, I'm going to ask you again later on about
Okay, maybe I can think of something. Oh, well, I just thought of something sad, but maybe that doesn't have anything to do with it. We'll go on.
Okay. A mentor in your life.
Well, who comes to my mind first and foremost are, don't get emotional, my two sisters.
Okay.
Because I mentioned, growing up with a mom with mental illness, I think for anybody out there who's grown up with maybe an alcoholic parent or also a parent with drug addiction or mental illness, it's a trying childhood. And, I had a fantastic dad and, God blessed me with two older sisters, much older, same parents, but one's 18 years older and one is 14 years older.
What are their names?
The oldest is Jeannie, J-E-A-N-N-E.
What was your, J-E-A-N-N-E?
Uh-huh.
What is her name? Last name?
Last name now, Beatty, B-E-A-T-T-Y.
Like Warren Beatty.
Exactly.
And she's 18 years older?
Right. She was a senior in high school when I was born.
Wow.
Same parents. And then the sister right below her is Bebe. B-E-B-E. Bebe.
What's her name?
Garrett.
B-E-B-E?
Yes.
B-E.
One E.
Okay, gotcha.
There you
like
go.
The shirt.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
A butter the hat. Garrett. Two R's, two T's. Right. And they just filled in all those gaps.
Wow.
Yeah. They were awesome.
So what did they? Well, obviously, they loved you and helped you.
Obviously.
But
and
what did they teach you about?
Oh, I think all the conversations that any other, teenager might have had with mom, about boyfriend or girlfriend or, you know, the struggles the teenagers go through, you know, the socials, the sports, the just your daily activities, the small stuff, the big stuff, all of it.
You've made a couple references to your mother. Can I ask what her illness was?
Mental illness.
And was there a diagnosis?
Oh, well, you know, back in those days, I guess you would say schizophrenia, bipolar. Right. And, you know, those days the medication was poor. So either when she was under medication, she'd sleep all the time, my father said. You know, my father stopped it. You know, they're not as high-tech and advanced and so specific as they are now. And, which, you know, she could have eliminated a lot of that. But, you know, she was... We were able to live with her, and my father kept her at home instead of, you know, admitting her to an institution. So, you know, of course, what does that teach me? You know, loyalty, dedication. Of course, you do feel awkward, you know, when you have a parent like that, and you're a little uneasy when your friends meet them, and yet your friends who really like you, they like her too. You know, they don't even, you know, they'll just, she's fine, don't worry, she's talking. She hasn't stopped talking since they walked in the door. But, you know, your true friends, they, you know, they'll love her anyway. And,
how was society back then towards the...
Exactly. You know, she didn't work, she stayed in the home. You know, she was capable in her own ways, you know, washing dishes, washing laundry,
right.
But... You know, we all picked up a lot of the slack, and my dad especially. So I think, you know, the kids compensate, you know, overcompensate.
Right. Wow. The three girls? The three girls?
And there are two boys. The two girls, and then two boys, and then myself.
Oh, you're the baby of five.
Right. So what I joke about now is, you know, my mom used to refer to me as the accident. You know, so I'd often go out, and you know, if I'm speaking to a group, I would say, okay, how many of you are accidents? You know, and a couple will raise their hand, you know, here and there. But, you know, according to one of our favorite books, Purpose Driven Life, you know, Rick Warren says, you are not an accident, and I know I'm not. So, but it is a joke.
Yeah.
Because as I was affectionately referred to, you know, this is the accident.
Okay, a major challenge, and this could be in your personal life. It could be regarding the conference. It could be regarding a lot of people say juggling work and family. But a lot of people aren't the wife of Lieutenant Governor either. So.
Major challenge personally. You know, obviously, when you grow up in a life like this, I have a girlfriend, my best friend, whose mom was an alcoholic while we were growing up. So we feel, you know, when you're watching something like Oprah and everybody's in line to blame their mother or their father about, you know, their misery, you know, so we kind of have. We share this, maybe this is, I don't want to say, shut up and get in line, or, you know, just, you know, to overcome and get over it and get on with it, you know. So, yeah, I feel like that was my challenge. And so, at this point, maybe the challenge probably was when the children were very young, you know, having four young children. That was hard, you know, working and... Like a lot of moms out there, lack of sleep.
But I want to go back to the first point you were making, though. Is it a challenge to not slide back into the wanting to blame other things?
No.
You've passed that.
Absolutely.
But you don't have any challenges now?
Right now, the challenge is family time. You know, the job is so demanding, and I think Duke does a great job at it. And he is disciplined and as careful as he is about trying to keep it somewhat condensed or, you know, trying to keep the border up around it, that it does affect, you know, our personal lives. We don't have him as much as he'd like to be there, or we'd like him to be there. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I print all the schedules for him, so he knows who has a game, who has what. So as much as he can, if he can, you know, run away and catch, you know, somebody's basketball game or volleyball game or football game, you know, he will definitely do it. So that's been the challenge, because prior to this, you know, that's what we're all about, is just our kids and home.
And how old are your children now?
Now, you know, it's a very exciting time. We have two that just finished college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. One, they're 23 years old, 21, 17 and a half, and 14.
Oh, gosh.
So the two big ones, one graduated early, one graduated late. So they both graduated May and June this year. Mm-hmm. It was a great, great, great year. And now we have a senior in high school and a ninth grader.
Was that hard for... I'm getting off the point, and pardon me if it was too personal, but was that difficult for... Well, I have a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old. And, you know, made decisions based on that and made decisions not to do certain things, because it feels like, you know, they're only going to be around... I mean, the one is a senior, and you know, she's already talking about...
I know.
And was that difficult running for office at the time when your children are they're older, but you know, you only have so much time.
Exactly.
Left with them?
Absolutely, 100%. And that's why it took us 11 months to announce that we were running. From the time that, you know, he was approached and we started considering it, it took us till April of 2002 to announce it.
Yeah.
And it was extremely difficult. You know, my husband, as a judge, you know, he worked in family court.
Right.
He did some of the most high-profile cases.
Right.
Now, and to living a very discreet, quiet life, just, you know, revolving around our kids, to do an about-face and put yourself front and center, you know, on a street corner,
yeah,
you know, with your name on your T-shirt and waving it. Everybody and anybody, that was a difficult decision, because I mean, feeling quite vulnerable and putting our children out there with us. So it was a long and hard decision. We talked with all of them about it. We prayed through the whole thing, and we just felt, you know, the Lord was opening another door. And once we had that conviction, it's then to be obedient to that.
Mm.
And the older kids, we were quite comfortable, because one started college in 2001, and one was about to graduate in 2003. So it's really the two younger ones we had to focus on and make sure that we went through the whole scenario. You know, Daddy, you know, runs for politics. You know, what we might expect, you know, if Daddy doesn't win, you know, this is what we might expect. Just preparing them, and I think even when he was a judge, I think they always had a concept of that. You know, people did look at them differently, you know, and expect more.
Right.
And you know, and it is hard, because, you know, if our kids, you know, turn left instead of right, you know, probably more people will know about it.
Sure.
You know, so it's very difficult, very vulnerable. As far as the kids and their ages, you know, I mean, from when they're like junior in high school, I was crying, like, baby's leaving. And yet, it's such a gift that to give them education and to give them the experience of college.
Right.
You know, and really have to focus on...
The last time I was in this room, your husband was sitting here, and I was somewhere. Maybe I was sitting where you were.
Oh.
And I've spoken to him, I've interviewed him several times, and I know that he talks about, you know, the importance of family dinners and things like this. I know he misses that a lot when he can't, but...
You know, the weeknights... I have to say, usually the kids have always eaten together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one will usually wait for the other one. Now there's just the two at home. And we try to, we, you know, one will go do the homework and come back. So that at least
really?
The kids, yes.
Oh, that's nice.
So they've always been on the kitchen counter. We're on the other side, you know, leaning over, maybe picking and not necessarily eating with them. But I have to say, God is good. We the six of us ate dinner Sunday, and we were on the kitchen counter and pulling in another stool, and somebody went to the dining room to bring a chair to the kitchen counter because that's where you hang out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we go in the dining room? So we all looked at each other. Everybody grabbed a pot. It's like rocket science, you know. Just so yeah, it's it is still our, you know, it's our priority, and you know, you got to be a little what was the word? Creative.
Right.
But it's all good.
Hobbies.
Hobbies. I love music. I love
playing, performing,
listening.
What kind of music?
Everything. Christian music, jazz. My husband and I are big jazz fans.
Really?
Yeah.
Like
old jazz. Not old.
Like big band jazz or?
Big band's fun. At home, you know, we still have a lot of vinyl.
Really?
And usually I have my kids know old stuff.
What do you consider old?
I have a funny story.
Okay.
When's your next interview? My daughter was at soccer practice at Kapi'olani Park, and there was a band warming up in the Waikiki show. Mm-hmm. My daughter at the time, I think she was 7th grade, and she told her girlfriends, well, this is not jazz, but just, she told her girlfriends, that sounds like James Taylor. And their friends said, who's James Taylor? You know, but they know Frank Sinatra. Usually on the weekends I'm playing. I just start pulling them all out.
Old records.
The old Jose Feliciano. We have Spyro Gyra and Crusaders.
All that 70s and 80s stuff.
Yeah. A lot of
so
that.
You didn't go to the Black Eyed Peas concert last
No,
night,
but our daughter did because it was her girlfriend's birthday and a mom bought tickets.
Oh, wow.
Wow, she got lucky.
Did she like it?
I haven't talked to her. She spent the night last night. She doesn't start school till next week. So.
Okay, books you've recently read, if any?
Books I've recently read.
Did one of these yesterday, interview yesterday, and the first person ever said, I don't really read books. At least he was honest.
Yeah, I love to read. I just don't, you know, just can't. I try to read I literally read the two newspapers in my bed before I go to sleep.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, on this cozy chair in the family room before I go to bed. I read Memoirs of a Geisha.
Yeah.
Which I read because I was on a trip, you know, and I have to say I was depressed after I read it, you know, to think of the life that they had, and you know, their goal in life is tragic. It's very, very sad. And I just read, because we had these couple trips on the plane, I just grab a Sidney Sheldon novel. Other side of Are You Afraid of the Dark? Is that it? A Sidney Sheldon.
Okay.
I just read it. But right next to my bed, I keep flipping through Mother Teresa's In My Words.
Oh.
I think it's called In My Words. You got to double check me.
Yeah, I always do the books.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, no, because there was nobody ever gets it quite right.
Yeah, I have a couple that I keep thumbing through that I haven't really tackled.
That's inspiring.
Oh, Duke bought it for me at Christmas, and I keep it by, and you
is
know.
Is it an autobiography?
It's got a little bio on her, but it's little bits and pieces of just her experiences. And one of the quotes I can think of because I used it in a present was that Mother Teresa said, God has called me to be faithful, not successful.
Mm.
Which is maybe ironic to what we're talking about, you know, but it just stands in my mind that, you know, that's her calling. That was, talk about leaders.
Right. Okay, let's get to that. I just want to backtrack a couple more things here.
Okay.
You talked about music.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of music does the Lieutenant Governor like? I have to know.
Oh, yeah, he likes...
What's the worst thing? Does he have any old Donny Osmond or anything like that?
Oh, no. No. No, we like the same. Okay. We really do. We like the old jazz.
And then, did you want to go back to the little-known fact?
Little-known fact. Gosh.
It's in your chocolate addiction.
Little-known fact. I think everybody knows, but I have to say I love to bake. If you ask me that.
What's your
do you have a
signature?
I do. Carrot cake. And I keep saying I'm going to sell it. So once I sell it to Starbucks or somebody, then I'll give it to everybody else.
Okay. Carrot cake is your favorite. I mean,
well,
your signature.
Yeah.
When you go to parties, people say, I hope.
Yes.
Zion is bringing her character.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to the leadership and women's leaders and the conference and things like that. You've made lots of references to female role models.
Yes.
Why is that?
I think it's just basic nature.
What can you tell me? Are there? Why is it important to have a women's leadership conference rather than a leadership conference?
Oh, absolutely. Having attended a few, I think, you know, women, by nature, we are more, I don't say we want to more, women by nature are sacrificing and the way we're made up, you know. It's emotional charge, and that's the way we're knit together. And when we come together in a big group, you know, we're inspired and we rally for each other, we cheer for each other, and we're motivated by each other.
Mm-hmm.
And after the last two conferences, that's what we've come away with, that bonding and that understanding and that need for us to take a break and spend some time together and listen to, you know, our girlfriends and our peers who've taken steps of faith and taken steps, you know.
But even though they're all women speakers, obviously, it's an eclectic range of...
Yes.
Backgrounds, personalities,
yes.
Stories, obviously.
Testimonies, yes.
Men come.
A few do, you know.
And what can men learn from going to a women's
community? I think they just have a great appreciation for maybe some struggles that they weren't aware of, or just accomplishments that women can have achieved. I think.
What sort of things have you taken from the two conferences you've been to in your own personal sort of...
Again, I think because it's one day, there are more women attending.
Uh-huh.
But I think that just affirms that, or reconfirms that, you know, that we are, you know, spread very thin.
Mm.
And we don't want to take the time out. We think it's playtime. And yet it's so fulfilling. It's invigorating. It's, you know, it's vital. It's important that we take time out together.
What it tells you is that women want to go. They want to take the time, but
they're
if it's going to be sacrificing themselves to go to take care of the other
the
side,
business,
they'll do that.
The home, whatever it is they're supposed to be doing, you know, they're going to have to cancel some appointments, but, you know, we got to do it.
And how important is it for young women, girls?
Oh,
to come.
This year, I know we have, again, St. Andrew's Priory and the ladies from La Pietra. I believe St. Francis. We have about 20 young women who help backstage, help present lays, who get to sit down and listen in. You know, it's a different world, you know, for our young men and women. But our young women, you know, they've... you know, laptop, you know, connected and under one arm, and the whole world is, you know, is at their fingertips, and I think having these women from around the world will just open it up to them. You know, we say it as parents or as aunts and uncles, you know, telling our kids to, you know, the world's a big place.
Right.
But to actually have these women leaders present would just, you know, confirm that for them.
And is that more important in an island state?
Absolutely. You know, the world is, you know, our world here is so small, and, you know, and yet we're in the middle of all of it. You know, I think I'm a perfect example. Working for an airline for 25 years, I never had a passport until, you know, 4 years ago. And I've been blessed to travel and, mm-hmm. and meet some of these women. I just returned from, not to talk about me, but I just returned from a women's conference in Washington, D.C. It was on July 12th. It was, WOW 2006. It's Women Diversity. Women in Diversity. Not getting it right. And best practices.
Yes, this sounds vaguely familiar.
Yes, and I don't know what number this was. Shucks, I'd have to go back and look. But they have their website, WOW 2006, and what I realize how far ahead we are here in Hawaii, having grown up with
diversity.
Regarding diversity,
yeah.
We've grown up all together, you know. In Washington, D.C., they're still making a point to mention that they have, you know, women of different ethnic backgrounds working in their offices. Well, here in Hawaii, you know, there's a Chinese lady next to you here, and a Filipino lady on the side, and a Japanese lady in the front, and a Caucasian
yeah.
person here, and a part Hawaiian, you know, in the middle. We just have grown up with this
yeah.
blessing. You know, and everybody, you know, I don't know, blinders, you know.
No, it's true. My father passed away, not this Christmas, but the previous Christmas, and my son would have been 12,
mm-hmm.
and in California, and we went back for the service, and I basically gave a eulogy and talked about my father's experience. My parents met in an internment camp. And we talked about the racism they faced.
We should be interviewing you.
But my son, who has known nothing but Hawaii, said to my mother, who's Japanese, "I didn't realize you and Grandpa were Japanese." And, you know, I mean, he knew it, but he didn't know it, you know, it didn't really, like, occur to him.
Exactly.
And my mother was just, wow, what a great...
That is a great, great statement.
He's a Hapa kid, but he's, you know, just colorblind.
Isn't that... See, I...
He's, you know, they're going, huh, Grandpa's Japanese.
But you see, that's how blessed we are.
Yeah.
I was talking with a lady, she's Chinese, they grew up in Hong Kong. Her family moved to San Francisco, or her sister moved to San Francisco mm-hmm. in her 30s. She was so surprised to see so many people that looked like her in San Francisco. Who would have thought? I went to the Philippines for the first time, my mother's homeland, in January. I came home, I told my husband, I said, I saw people who look like me. You know, here people assume I'm part Hawaiian,
mm-hmm.
You know, some mix,
right.
part Hawaiian. But when I'm there, everybody knows, you know. But that's how spoiled we are, you
right.
know, where...
But so, going back to
sorry.
The point we were... No, it's no, don't, please, that's very interesting. For... A young a girl, woman in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
who, as you say, we live in a different culture or a different time, where there are all these opportunities. Why is it important to see women leaders who have become, you know,
right.
is it still important
I
to
think,
have that lesson?
Right. I think we're not far from, you know, the 50s and the 60s, you know, where we were growing up and, you know, men were predominantly in these
right.
roles in leadership. So I think for many of us, it is not surprising, you know, to see more, and yet it's important to let the girls know that, you know, they have every reason to hold those positions.
Right. And is it also important to know that you can have one of those positions if you want to and you want to work for it, or you also have the option of staying home and doing the holding down that for it? Is that
being mom?
Is that real? Have we come close?
I think. Oh, absolutely. I think for myself personally, you know, I said, you know, there are no letters after my name except MOM. You know, and you know, master of motherhood. I don't think I've mastered it yet. You know, I have kids who are, you know, adults, but.
Many of my contemporary women colleagues, after 15, 20 years of being in the workforce, are now saying, you know, I did that. This is what's important to me now,
yes.
Because my children are a certain age,
yes.
Or whatever.
Yes.
I'm finding a lot of women are doing that.
Yes.
And that's.
It's great, and yet, and you know, it's just that catch-22 where some of the women go, I better go get the career now, have the kids later, and yet our bodies are saying, I can't do that now. You know, that's, you know, well, maybe we need to look at adoption or other things. But it is, you know, women have that, I think, that innate struggle within them. You know, yes, I want to do this. And then we've got women who, you know, are home, who would rather not be home.
Right.
You know, we got the moms at work who, unfortunately, you know, cost of living across the United States, you know, requires us to do
right.
that. So.
It'd be nice to give the young ones options, though.
Yes, just let them know, you know.
And does your daughter go?
This year, you know, she's 21 and she will be attending. Yes, she will be. Yes.
That's great. Okay, anything else we'd like to talk about?
I'm
taking up so much of your time.
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm good. My husband's on the neighbor island. Kids are at school.
But is there anything else you'd like to say for our interview?
I still like to nip that little fact about myself. And
The little known fact? That one?
You know, because I go around, and I mean, I don't speak a whole lot, but I speak to a lot of women's groups, and I've spoken to, and I usually share, I think, the part about my upbringing is what's surprising to a lot of people. You know, you tell them you grew up in Makiki, they just think, you know, Makiki Heights or Dennis or something. They don't think below Wilder Avenue, you know, in a rental. You know, I think that I just had a normal, mm-hmm. you know, life here. What came to mind, though, is most recently is I had to do my first eulogy. Just a couple weeks ago for one of my best friends. That was very difficult. But I did it, and you know how you go to those things and sometimes people just break down and you can't understand, and you know, you're feeling really bad, and yet everyone's feeling some discomfort. And but you know, I double spaced it and I made it nice and big, and I try not to look up like you're supposed to, and really just tried to just use my voice and
right.
express what I had to say about one of my best friends, and I did it. So
well, that's hard. It's
that's
a lot
really
harder
hard.
When it's somebody
so,
your age.
So maybe, yeah.
Not an older person like my father.
You know, so maybe what's not known is that, maybe that's what God's telling me to say, is that I am very involved in bereavement at my own church.
Oh.
I've, I'm heading up the bereavement ministry at our church.
You're heading it.
Yes.
What
you know, I raised my hand to help. It's the name of our church is Resurrection of the Lord.
Where is that?
NYPO Gentry.
Resurrection of the Lord.
Right.
May I ask why you got involved with the bereavement ministry?
This is maybe another 5 minutes. We have a nephew. This is Duke's sister.
Okay.
Her oldest son. Passed away of lymphoma. Now Duke and Reed were only 10 years apart,
right.
So they're more like brothers. This is 9 years ago. Since then, we have a Reed Richards Foundation.
Right.
We have an annual
golf
right. tournament, which is, you know, out of, you know, the hands of, you know, this family. You know, we created this very successful golf tournament. Everybody says they love it. You know, we start with Mitsuken, you know, before they go out. It's really good. Anyway, from our successful golf tournament, we have bereavement workshops for children. We initially hooked up with the Girl Scouts, and they have like an annual camp where kids who have lost a parent will go on a camp. Now, we felt this was, you know, we did it 2 years, just one weekend, and the kids would go. And then what would they do? You know, you think, what do they do on Sunday when they get picked up? You know, the mom or the dad who's survived, you know, will ask them, how was it? What'd you do? It was fine. Nobody talks about it. So my sister-in-law felt we needed to include the parent who's left with the child. So we had a social worker develop a program for us where we have the young teenagers, the older, well, the young kids, 7 to 12, right. And then the teenagers, and the caregiver, we call them, so mom or dad. For example, 1 year we had about 6 kids and all the dads passed away. You know, so we've got like 6 moms in a group. So what we do is we do about 5 workshops, 5 classes, 5 sessions. The kids do an activity, the adults do an activity, and then we do something together, have snacks. And so we are having conversation about grief. And we had a couple of very good sessions. And our struggle now is really marketing ourselves. And, you know, we've sent letters and pamphlets out to every public middle school, elementary school, and high school to the counselors, letting them know we have this program. We're part of the Bereavement Network.
Who is we?
The Reed Richards Foundation. We have another name for our bereavement part, but it comes under the Reed Richards Foundation. So we are getting ourselves out there, trying to get people to know that we exist. We are actually talking about revisiting our bylaws so that maybe we can fund other programs that are already out there. You know, part of the Bereavement Network is hospice, St. Francis Hospice.
I'm hearing that a lot of the grief groups are getting overwhelmed with spouses whose military members have died.
Right, and there are a bunch of us belong. You know, even the visitors Aloha.
Right.
You know, when someone dies.
Right.
Visiting, you know, they're part of the network. So we meet quarterly, and you know, just getting ourselves marketed, getting ourselves out there, and maybe branching out in other ways. So I had, because I'm not a golfer, and many in the family are, I got very involved in the bereavement side. And, you know, I was a facilitator for part of it.
Right.
And so when we're starting this bereavement ministry at our church, you know, I raise my hand and somehow I'm
got put in charge.
Kind of organize it. So what I've told them is we're going to get our folders. We'll get anybody, you know, can walk up to it, get the form out, fill out all the information, get people to the different positions. And it's really just assisting our pastor so that, you know, when there is a funeral, we'll meet with the family, fill out the paperwork, and then we'll get a music person, a kitchen person, a couple of ushers, and that's all. You know, our priest used to do it all, and now we can help him do it. And
but it's more than that. It's more than just organizing.
So just
I can tell from
being
you.
Involved in the bereavement
ministry
at my church and out in, you know, in Hawaii is maybe a little known fact. That is right.
Okay. We'll put in the chocoholic though too.
It's life. It's basic.
Mrs. Iona, thank you very much for all your generous time.
Oh, my pleasure, Dan. It's great to talk to you.